Right, so thank you. The title of my presentation today is Assessing Nitrogen Use Efficiency in Sugar Beets Grown Under Variable Fertilizer and Drip Irrigation Rates. I'm a master's student at Fresno State, and this will inevitably be my thesis research. So nitrogen use efficiency, can be measured in a number of ways, but it's generally expressed as a ratio of output to input. For example, nitrogen pounds removed versus over pounds of nitrogen applied. And this is a very important percentage for growers because it provides them with a fair assessment of how their it gives them a fair assessment of their fertilizer input. But this doesn't give us an entire picture, and that's really because of the complexity of the nitrogen cycle. So when a grower applies fertilizer to their field, a number of things can happen. For one thing, we can have leaching below the root zone. We can have effective uptake of nitrogen into the plant. We can have volatilization of nitrogen into the atmosphere. We can also have a process of denitrification. So we really need a much more robust sampling and analytical method to understand nitrogen use efficiency on the farm. And irresponsible fertilizer application can lead to a lot of serious implications for the environment as well as ourselves. So years of over-applications of fertilizer coupled with inefficient irrigation systems have resulted in elevated levels of nitrate in groundwater. And the EPA has set the maximum contaminant level for nitrate in drinking water at 10 milligrams of nitrate per nitrogen liter. However, it's quite common for groundwater and agricultural areas to exceed this maximum limit. And the problem with this is a large population of people rely on groundwater as their sole source of drinking water. And the consumption of nitrates in water is known to cause methemoglobinemia, or blue baby syndrome, which is an acute toxic response to nitrite exposure that precludes oxygen transport by the blood. In addition to this, the accumulation of nitrates in water overstimulates the growth of aquatic plants and algae, which can use up available oxygen in the water, and this can lead to eutrophication, or literally death of a body of water. And so the need to maximize nitrogen use efficiency has led to some recent research where we're looking at alternative cropping systems. And that kind of leads me to drip irrigated sugar beets. Everybody knows that sugar beets are used for sugar processing, but they have a lot of other potential uses. For example, they're an excellent source of biofuel. Sugar beets produce twice as much ethanol per acre compared to corn grown for biofuel in the Midwest. They're also a well-documented fodder crop, boasting a higher total digestible nutrient percentage compared to silage corn. Now anybody that's ever seen a sugar beet in person knows that it's a rather large crop, especially compared to your garden beet variety. And the unique physiology of this root crop allows it to mine deep within the soil profile and look for available water and nutrients that would be otherwise unavailable to more shallow-rooted crops. And sugar beets also boast an impressive salinity tolerance at 7 decisiemens per milliliter for a 0% yield loss and yield reduction slope of 5.9%. Now, virtually all the sugar beets in America are grown with a gravity-fed irrigation system, or what you might call a furrow or flood irrigation. So the idea of growing sugar beets with drip irrigation is a rather novel idea. And to be sure, there's only a handful of studies in North America that have really examined growing sugar beets with drip tape. And the majority of these studies have concluded that yields can be increased with drip irrigation compared to traditional flood irrigation. One particular study in Wyoming took an extra step and actually evaluated fertilizer use efficiency for the sugar beets in drip treatments. And perhaps the greatest takeaway from this study was that the amount of residual nitrates in the drip treatments were 1.6 to 2.4 times higher than the flood treatments, suggesting that nitrate leaching is significantly lowered by using drip irrigation. And this has sort of served as the impetus for our study in Fresno, California. And that leads me to the project at hand. Our project takes place on the Fresno State Campus Farm in Fresno, California. It's on a sandy loam soil. And we have three growing seasons. We usually plant in April and harvest sometime in September. And we just finished our last harvest this fall. But today I'll just be presenting results from the first two growing seasons in 2015 and 2016. The experimental design is a split plot with three replications, the main treatment being irrigation with a 100% ETC drip line, a 70% ETC drip line, and a flood 100% ETC. Now, the sub-treatments are nitrogen fertilizer rates of 0, 100, 150, and 200 pounds per acre. And so here we have a, here we have a map of the experimental design and a picture of the sugar beets on a beautiful day in spring in Fresno, California. Now, the overall objective of this project is to really determine the best agronomic practices for growing sugar beets under drip irrigation. And so we really have a wide range of parameters that we measure, from root weight, length, and circumference. We look at the difference in shoot biomass, and we look at Brix and sucrose analysis. And but I'm not going to get too much into detail into that because of the scope of this presentation. But I will talk about our methods for nitrate analysis. So we do extensive soil sampling. We take soil samples from all 36 plots at three different depths, 12 inches, 24 inches, and 36 inches, for a total of 108 samples. And if you've never been out in the middle of the summer in Fresno taking 108 soil samples, I suggest you try it. It builds character. And so we collect these samples at before planting, at mid-season, and as well as post-season after the final harvest. The samples are placed into a Ziploc bag, and we then weigh out 5 grams and use a potassium chloride extraction method, and then use the AQ2 discrete auto analyzer to calculate absorbance rates and therefore determine our nitrate concentrations in milligrams per liter. We also take petiole samples throughout the season. We take the petiole samples anywhere between 10 to 14 days after a fertilization event, and we also take petiole samples with each harvest from all 36 plots throughout the season, both preliminary harvest and final harvest. The petiole samples are dried, ground, and we send these off to a local laboratory in Fresno County. And so this leads me to the results. Again, this is just the first two growing seasons, 2015 and 2016. Now, for all of the background soil sampling that we did analysis for in both seasons, we did not see any statistical difference between the nitrate concentrations. However, by the time we get to the mid-season soil sampling, we start to see a difference in nitrate concentrations. Now, if you look at this in 2015, we see that a greater concentration is in the second and third foot depths versus the top foot. And in 2016, oddly, this switches to the top foot being the highest concentrations of nitrates. So this is somewhat convoluted results, but when we start to look at irrigation and as well as the interaction between depth and irrigation, we start to tease out some more meaning from these results. In 2015, you can see that our deficit drip irrigation treatment, as well as the flood treatments, had significantly higher nitrate concentrations compared to the 100% drip treatments. And the similar thing happened in 2016. Now, if you look at the significant interaction between depth and irrigation in 2016, we see that 100% drip treatments do not have any variable differences for the 100% treatments. But when we look at the deficit and the flood treatments, again, the top foot layer has the highest nitrate concentrations. Now, by the time we get to the post-harvest sampling, we see that nitrogen rates start to come into play. And interestingly, we see that the 0 and 100 pounds per acre treatments have the highest nitrate accumulations in the top foot, and the higher rates of nitrogen fertilization actually have lower rates of nitrates in the top foot, as well as the second and third foot. Now, you might start to assume or interpret these results and think that, well, the 200 pounds per acre rate, there may be more effective uptake of nitrogen, and we're getting greater yield results, or perhaps we're getting greater leaching. And so either way, we need to account for the nitrates that are lost in these results. And so the next thing that we do is we correlate this data with yield data. And so our yield response to irrigation and fertilizer in 2015, we see that, in fact, fertilizer did not have an effect on yield results based on fertilizer. However, irrigation did have an impact on yield, with the 100% drip treatment having a higher yield compared to the 70% and flood treatments. In 2016, however, we see that irrigation and fertilizer treatments did not have an effect on yield. So basically, we're seeing not an increase in yield with the higher rates of nitrogen fertilizer application, but we're also not accounting for these nitrates in the soil analysis. So there's a missing piece of the puzzle here. So finally, we look at nitrogen use efficiency, and this is calculated as yields per unit of nitrogen applied. And in both 2015 and 2016, the nitrogen rate of 100 pounds per acre, we have the greatest nitrogen use efficiency with a value of 0.26 and 0.32. So basically, the takeaway results today, these preliminary results suggest that deficit drip irrigation can achieve similar yields to traditional flood irrigation, while simultaneously maximizing nitrogen use efficiency and mitigating the negative effects of nitrate leaching and contamination, all while providing an alternative cropping solution for less than ideal growing situations. And so I'd like to thank California State Agricultural Research Initiative for funding this program, as well as everyone at the Grad Lab Research Group for all their help. And thank you. That is a big question. Yes, sir.
You didn't really explain the nitrogen windows of Hive.
Okay, so the nitrogen, we actually had to apply these by hand because of the experimental design, and we applied them twice throughout the season. We waited until about, it was about late April, early May, after the plants had been established, and we applied them, and we split our fertilizer rates in half.
So it was broadcast over the top?
No, we had to do a liquid fertilizer application, so it was a UAN 32, and we applied them directly to the top of the bed by hand by making the mixture and applying them to each bed. Yeah, there was, because of the experimental design, we weren't able to fertigate in this experiment.
You mentioned that, and I probably missed, you mentioned that the higher N rates had lower soil test N. Where did the N go if it didn't go into yield?
Exactly. And one slide that I forgot to include here was the petiole analysis. And in 2015 and 2016, we didn't see any significant differences in the nitrate uptakes in the petioles. So we weren't having more uptake into the shoots. And the question is it being leached into the groundwater? Right. Well, with the drip, I don't know if it is with the deficit treatments because the accumulation in the top foot was significantly higher. However, it seems like there may be some potential leaching with the 100% drip treatments.
Anthony, you might want to mention we're also analyzing the nitrate contents in the sugar beet and trying to correlate that with the sugar content.
Yes.
A lot of that data is, I don't think it presented that, but we are seeing some correlations with that sugar. And that's a good point because now you can take the yield and see what that nitrate content that might be. Are those typical studies of
beets? No. this was an exception.
Because
yeah.
I was not going to say there's a nitrate, you know.
Any other questions? One more question? All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.